From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Each week, our panel of shrinks takes a look at pop culture through the fascinating lens of psychology. I'm Dave Verhagen here in Nashville. I'm a psychologist, author, Comic-Con panelist, and your new winner of Dancing with the Stars yet again. And today, our panel is missing, sadly, not quite Dr. Wright, Emma Kate Wright. We're sad that she's not here, but we soldier on. Our panel now includes somewhat of a psychologist, at least that's what he says, and author and AspieCon founder and Comic-Con and HeroesCon panelist, Dr. Frank Gaskell. Hello, Frank.
Hello, David. Thank you.
Are you in a good mood or a bad mood today, Frank?
I'm in a little bit of an anxious mood because...
Your hair?
Yes.
Your chin?
Because I can't seem to get in with Kel for my haircut.
Oh.
And I foresee a bit of a mullet by Monday or Tuesday, and I'm starting to freak out.
The notorious Kel.
Yeah.
Kel lives among legends at Southeast Lake.
Yes, he does. So there's that's how I'm feeling there, Dave.
We'll tell real briefly a Kel story that we had our 15th anniversary, and Frank decided that that was the time that he got up in front of everyone and thanked his hairdresser, Kel.
So there might have been a little bit of liquid confidence passed around that evening.
Yeah, some enhancement for for that. That helped that happen.
And I would add that Kel is a fan of the Shrink Tank podcast.
Well, shout out to Kel.
We love Kel.
And for all of my hairstylists at Great Clips, what up? Thank you for the $14.99 specials. Looking good. Hope you like Shrink Tank.
That's right. You just heard him. It's Jonathan Hederle. He's a licensed professional counselor, an expert on substance abuse treatment, and our certified Asian. He's written published book chapters on Game of Thrones, Star Wars, and Walking Dead. And he served up,
Mr. Dave, what would you like for appetizer? I serve you up.
Oh, boy. He's been a panelist for HeroesCon, including, again, this year, in just a couple of days from now. So each week, Jonathan rounds up a story or two. I think you've got one good story for us today. Stories of psychology in the news that we call being human.
Well, Dave and Frank, with all of the headlines going around about terrorist attacks all over the world, a recent study published in Human Nature Behavior tried to reveal what is it about the psychological profiles of terrorists. So the search for a terrorist personality or mindset actually dominated psychological research in the 70s and 80s. This new study assessed the cognitive and psychological profiles of 66 Colombian paramilitaries that were imprisoned for terrorist acts. The researchers found that poor moral reasoning is what defines terrorists. They found that terrorists had higher levels of aggression and lower levels of emotion than non-criminals. However, there was no difference between IQ or executive functioning. The biggest difference between terrorists and other groups was seen in moral cognition. They found that terrorists are guided by an abnormal over-reliance on outcomes, that the ends justifies the means. So, Frank, as our resident moralist, what do you think about these findings when it comes to terrorists?
This article reminded me a little bit of the Columbine kids, where one of them theoretically may have had a underdeveloped amygdala. And when the article says high aggression and low emotion, I wonder how much of that is also just trying to feel, and then being surrounded by this environment of no education, indoctrination, no way out. So then they just rely on the excitement of the moment and that they're going to accomplish something, buying into this idea that what they're doing is moral and religious, but it's actually not.
At first, I thought this was kind of a stupid and common sense piece of research, but the more I thought about it, it actually is really good stuff because I did my dissertation on moral reasoning, and the lowest level of moral reasoning, if you take the Kohlberg scale, and Kohlberg is a guy who studied moral reasoning and put it into a hierarchy, and he had six layers or levels of moral reasoning. And so the lowest level of moral reasoning is something is right or wrong based on whether or not you're going to get caught and punished, right? So if you can get away with it, it's right.
If you get caught and punished, then it was bad. That's the most primitive, low-level standard of moral reasoning. The highest is that things are just sort of universally right or wrong. In other words, there's sort of universal principles that make something right or make something wrong. And in the middle are things like, well, it's a law or it's a rule or it's good for the common good. You know, it's for the common good, those kinds of things. But what it sounds like this is saying, we tend to think of terrorists, believe it or not, I think our conception of terrorism is that they are guided by some high-minded moral position. In other words, they might have low education and they might have, you know, dire circumstances, but it's kind of this moral stance that they take of like, this is something I'm doing for some, you know, bigger good or something that's inherently that I should do or right to do. And what the study is saying is the opposite. That they're way at the bottom of the scale of moral reasoning. That it's just purely a very primitive way of thinking morally. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, and that's that. I can't remember the name of the book, but Al-Baghdadi, and how all of ISIS kind of began. Black Flags, I believe. It was called.
Right, that was a great book, by the way. Black
Flags. Great book. Really underscores how these people, they were not guided by morality at all. And in the camps they set up and the prisoners they took, they're not guided by Islam or any of that stuff. They're just setting up power and control and taking crap and trying to get away with it.
Right. Well, and the thing about Kohlberg that I appreciate, and then you kind of look at more religious fundamentalism or religious thinking, is that Kohlberg's stage is really at the top. It's that ability to handle nuance and critical thinking versus straight up black and white, all or nothing thinking. But when you look at a lot of historical religious doctrine, it's very black and white. It operates in a lot of absolutes. So to me, it makes sense that somebody that's guided by some hyper-religious ideals sees things only in black and white, is not able to function in shades of gray or something that's maybe good for me, but it other people would suffer on that behalf, and they're unable to reconcile that. Mm-hmm. They think they're at the highest moral level.
Right.
So psychology says they are actually at the most underdeveloped ability for moral reasoning.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think the significant thing that comes out of this is there is this sort of narrative that terrorists tend to be, at least many of them, are guided by this sort of high-minded moral or spiritual position, and really what this is saying is it's actually not that at all. And so I think that's pretty significant. All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, it'll be our trending topic, which today is comedians and controversy. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Good psychology can change your life. At PsychBytes, we feature articles and videos with practical psychology that you can use every day. PsychBytes is a new psychology website with free articles and videos from dozens of the best psychology experts. Check it out on psychbytes.com.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville, along with Frank Gaskell and Jonathan Hederle in Charlotte. And our trending topic today is comedians and controversy. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about today. We'll start with Kathy Griffin, who, as you've all heard, got fired from her gig with CNN, has faced tremendous backlash from her photo shoot where she held up a bloody head of Donald Trump, kind of a la ISIS picture. And she's gotten sort of almost universally yelled at, and there's been a lot of backlash against her. Although it's interesting that a few comedians like Seinfeld, Jim Carrey, and a few others have defended her. So that's one. Then also we have Bill Maher, who on his show used the N-word really out of context. Like, he just sort of made it happen. And again, there's been calls for his firing. HBO, who carries his show, has not supported him in that, and they've apologized. He has also apologized. By the way, Kathy Griffin has apologized as well. But yet other people like Jim Jeffries, Comedy Central, Joy Behar, and a few others have defended him Some African-American celebrities like Ice Cube and others have said that they would continue to appear on the show. Then you've got Stephen Colbert, who made a crude joke, had actually an FCC, I'll say investigation against him, which didn't find anything. It was a crude joke about Trump and Putin, had to be bleeped out. So you've got, and there are others. Those are three really prominent ones, Kathy Griffin, Bill Maher, Stephen Colbert, and some others. What do you think of all this? I'll throw it to Frank first. What's your take on all this?
I kind of wish I didn't see the Kathy image of the head, because like you can't unsee it. And I'm also one of those stupid people that saw one of the ISIS murders, and you just can't unsee it. It's horrifying. And like I get why people are up in arms, but how big a role social media plays in these circumstances that I never experienced growing up. I mean, some of the stuff I was watching in the 70s or listening to is super inappropriate. But there wasn't this platform of the internet to give the backlash. And there's another comedian. It's a really funny guy. I can't remember his name, but he says, if people say something you're offended by, why don't you just walk away? Just leave it alone. And so my question too is, what is this? Just if we didn't have social media, would we all be jumping on this? Would it have such ramifications?
Yeah, so that's another aspect of this, is the power of social media in these kinds of controversies. Jonathan, what do you think about the whole thing, about all this coming to a head at once, it seems like?
Well, I mean, I definitely think we are in a period in our culture where it is about extremes. And we've been talking about this leading up to the election of Donald Trump and even the fallout and after he was elected. We are in a culture where people are not listening to each other. They're shouting at each other. It's very divisive. When I think of Bill Maher, when I think of Kathy Griffin, they're actually two comedians I just personally don't like. Like, I don't enjoy their material. And they already have sort of set themselves up as shock comedians. Their whole point is to push the envelope and be provocative and be offensive. And if that's kind of the wheelhouse you operate in today's times, where our culture overall is really operating in extremes, they are going to cross a line. Because they're wired to offend. And like Frank is saying, on social media, it's so easy to get offended. In some ways, it's so easy to get offended, nothing is offensive anymore because everything is a microaggression on some level. So for Kathy's sake, I mean, really depicting a very graphic and bloody image to shock and to provoke people, like, it was inevitable. Somebody like Kathy Griffin, if it wasn't her, someone else was going to do this in these times. Like, the whole thing with Bill Maher, that really caught me off guard. But the more I think about it, this is a guy that tends to speak first, think maybe second, maybe 12th, maybe not at all. I mean, you know, he really has removed himself from being able to say anything of critical use in terms of politics, because first and foremost, he wants to be a shock comedian.
And what I'm about to say, Dave, go ahead and get your eye roll out of the way.
Oh, kids these days.
Okay, thank you.
Get off my lawn.
Here's the thing that's strange to me, and you may be able to answer this for me. Howard Stern's been doing this forever. Forever.
Yes.
And in many ways, far more extreme. And he just keeps doing it and has 30 million listeners. So what is it about Kathy doing this? What if a man had done that? What if somebody who wasn't as easily vilified, or as Kathy, like, I find her annoying, so she's an easy target, but what if Seinfeld had done it? What if somebody else had done it? Would it be the same issue? And that's, I just, it's hard for me to understand why Howard's able to get away with it, even though I love it.
Well, congratulations on the Howard Stern reference.
Thank you.
I think we're like 12 consecutive podcasts in a row for Howard Stern reference, probably. But that's
thank
good.
You, no, David.
I actually think that's really appropriate, and I have a I'll say a theory for why that's so. Here's my Howard Stern theory. My Howard Stern theory is two things. It's kind of the Donald Trump effect. It's like so much is coming at you all the time that after a while, you get desensitized to it, and things that would be really outrageous for someone else become kind of normalized. But the second is, he traffics in this day in and day out, 4 hours a day, 5 hours a day. And because he's so out there, then he's not kind of operating, even though he's become more mainstream and he's got a bazillion listeners and very loyal following, he's operating in the fringes. And so these other comics who are trying to operate more in the mainstream, you know, to be on cable network shows and that kind of thing, they're held to a different standard because he's really always positioned himself as this outsider who he's saying this stuff all the time. If you had to call this into question, it'd be every hour. It wouldn't
be. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
So it makes a lot of sense.
So it's what's happening. I think, you know, we've talked about the psychology of humor in here before, and the theory that we like a lot is this, it's called the benign violation theory, which is everything's funny because it's a benign violation. What that means is it's got to be a violation of some norm. It's got to be a violation of something. Something's got to happen that's not right. It could be as subtle as a turn of a phrase, or it could be as out there as a like really scary prank. But it has to be a violation, but then it also has to be benign, meaning that nobody really gets hurt. And so part of the question with this stuff is, you know, when you use the N-word, are you harming people? If you're showing something that horrible, like a severed head with blood all over it, is that no longer benign? And so there's a question about the humor aspect of it in addition to the appropriateness of it, because clearly they both acknowledge it wasn't appropriate. It wasn't right to do. Both of them have said that. The question more is like, did they cross the line in terms of even that it could even be considered funny, or that it should be considered funny? And I think the answer is no. I think they crossed that line. Jonathan, any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at both Kathy Griffin or Bill Maher, for her, there's no context. There's nothing that really makes what she did funny. Mm-hmm. So it's just complete violation, and there's nothing benign, there's nothing humorous about it. So it stands in and of itself, and it just falls flat.
Right.
And whereas Bill Maher, you know, when I heard what Bill Maher said, I thought back to Comedy Central roasts, which is one of my guilty pleasures, which let's face it, that has about 20 times more offensive content. But like you said, it's marginalized. People go to that because they specifically know what they're talking about. He was trying to, quote unquote, have a civil debate with guests, and he just threw out the N-word. And like you said, that really was out of character, out of context with what they were talking about. And I guess, does he find that funny? I mean, in that moment, was it an attempt to be funny that fell completely flat? It's very hard for me to get into the mind of somebody thinking that would be a punchline that landed.
Well, I'll tell you this. I have a little different opinion of Bill Maher. I agree with you about Kathy Griffin. I've never found her especially funny. But Bill Maher, it kind of runs hot and cold for me. Sometimes I'm really irritated by him. Sometimes I think he's really intriguing to listen to and can be very funny and very witty in the moment. I think Bill Maher, you know, and I think he would say this about himself, is a pretty narcissistic guy. I think he's pretty up on Bill Maher. And I think he also sees himself as kind of the modern day Lenny Bruce. And so I think you put those two things together, and I think he thinks he's got a lot more latitude to say stuff than other people do. I think he thinks he can get away with that because he's the guy that's just going to tell it like it is and going to, you know, not filter himself. and that he's somehow special in that way. And this kind of proved that he wasn't special in that way, and he shouldn't be. He shouldn't be, think of himself. His show does serve a decent function of having some decent debate. I watch it most weeks, but I think that was clearly a misfire for him, and he acknowledges that. And for him to acknowledge that, for somebody that's as narcissistic as he is, you know that he's crossed a line. You know that he's not a guy that's going to be pressured into much. I will say, though, I don't think that comment served a function, and I don't think the picture that Kathy Griffin did, but I do think Stephen Colbert, even though he probably chose a bad word, does. I think Stephen Colbert and Seth Meyers have become vital in this era. Like, I think they're the two late-night comics who've become vital. It's really interesting to me that, you know, if you go back even 2 years ago, mm-hmm. the mood in late-night television was set by Jimmy Fallon. Let's play yep. games. Let's have fun. Let's not take anything seriously. You had James Corden that's kind of in on that. Jimmy Kimmel a little bit to that, you know, a little more of a prankster. And now the tone is being set by these people that are really going after political issues aggressively, like super aggressively. So you got Colbert, you've got Seth Meyers, who their stuff is just stinging, but I think it's vital. So I see Colbert as being a little different from the other two in that regard. You guys have a thought about that?
Well, I don't know how I think about this, but these are two comedians that are older. And did they come up in the comedy clubs? If Kathy Griffith gets up there and holds up a bloody head in a little dark comedy club, it's we're all in this, it's dark, we can joke about this and it's okay. But once you're pulling that stuff on social media and the entire world seeing it, you're not allowed to laugh at that.
Right. Jonathan?
Well, I think you're dead on both with Seth Meyer and Stephen Colbert. I remember when Stephen Colbert made the switch to mainstream TV late night, and there was a lot of questions about, without his Colbert persona, does he have anything to offer? And early on, I think it was hit or miss. Like, he really needed to figure out how to transition and find a very pure and authentic way to engage the audience with the content that interested him with his late night platform. But I have seen him find that perfect balance between what The Daily Show used to do with Jon Stewart. And I think Trevor Noah is still kind of finding that place and role for him. So he found that merge between what Jon Stewart used to do and sort of a little bit of that David Letterman with Late Night, because he is not cut in the same vein as Jimmy Fallon or Jay Leno, that kind of gullible, lovable buffoon, but really there's not a lot of meat beneath what they do. They're just sort of fanboys with their – and they serve a purpose too. Like, Jimmy Fallon is a lot of fun, but he really has tried to stay out of the political discourse, whereas I think Stephen Colbert and Seth Meyer, having done Weekend Update with SNL, they're very sharp and they're good at it and they want to do that.
Yeah, and I will say, in defense of Jimmy Fallon, I personally, he might not be the guy I would watch first of the three major late night hosts at that hour, but he's probably, if not one of the best late night hosts at his job, big picture. He's the most talented guy, big picture, you know, the whole thing. And I think when he had Donald Trump on and he kind of tousled his hair and he got lots of backlash, and he even said it affected him a lot more than we realized, like he had some sleepless nights about that. I think that was very unfair to him. I really do. I think that's his gig, you know, and to ask him to be Stephen Colbert or to be, you know, Jon Stewart is just completely unfair. So I think there's a place for him, and for somebody that just wants that in their evening to kind of unwind and watch celebrities play games and be silly, that's perfectly fine. But I think we're really seeing these vital voices like Colbert and Seth Meyer really come into their own. The night of the election, Colbert had a special that was live on Showtime, not on CBS, but on Showtime, still from the Ed Sullivan Theater, but it was just on, you know, because Showtime and CBS are both owned by the same people. And they clearly expected a different outcome. And when Trump won or was winning, you could just feel the air go out of the room, and they didn't know what to do. And for the weeks to come, probably 2 to 3, maybe even a whole month of weeks to come, it was very hard to find their footing. And once he found it, he has gone for it, like in a really amazing way. His monologues are really like pieces of art, and that might sound overstated, but they're really extraordinary these days. All right, any last comments about comedians and controversy before we take our last break?
Nope.
All right, we're going to take our last break. When we come back, it'll be our doctor's orders, and this is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Hero House Publishing is pleased to announce Heroic Inspirations by Michael Kreitzer. Over the ages, superheroes in various forms have been speaking to humanity in togas, robes, and now tights and capes. They speak to us about the human condition. They help us work through our fears and failures. Heroic Inspirations draws out rich lessons superheroes provide for our daily lives. How does Superman teach us to deal with difficult people? What do the X-Men tell us about balancing individual and communal identities? Superheroes speak to these and many other life questions. Michael Kreitzer has been researching and teaching on superheroes for over 10 years, and now his book, Heroic Inspirations, is available to you at herohousepublishing.com or amazon.com. Order your copy today.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. I'm Dave Verhagen, along with Frank Gaskell and Jonathan Hederle, and we wrap this all up with our doctor's orders. These are things that we're personally enjoying in pop culture. And Frank, what do you have for us?
I have finished the House of Cards last season, and I was absolutely blown away by it. Just when I think it can't get more unbelievable, it becomes unbelievable. I took my breath away last night.
Really? Was that the finale?
Yeah, really. Yeah, I believe it is, because, I mean, it's a cliffhanger. And I had to just sit there and think about it for about a half hour just to figure out what I just saw.
Hmm. All right. Awesome. I am so far behind on that show, but I love the show. I think it's a great show. I just am really behind on it. So definitely recommend it. Jonathan, yep. How about you?
I am currently watching the newest season of America's Got Talent, and it is one of the reality contest shows that I like because of the variety. So it's not just singing. It's not just comedy. You can see ventriloquism. You can see dance groups. And it's something that my kids and I, we watch together. So I really enjoy it. Highly recommend. So far, there has been this amazing, like, 9 or 10-year-old ventriloquist that also sings. Amazing. And then this past week, there was a singer who lost her hearing at age 19 and uses vibrations on the ground to be able to identify her pitch.
No way.
It's amazing. Highly recommend it. So it's not just the standard diva Whitney Houston covers that you hear on a lot of other shows. America's Got Talent. Check it out.
All right. Sounds very good. That'll do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. We hope you'll check us out on shrinktank.com for articles, videos, and polls about all kinds of things in pop culture. Check us out on shrinktank.com. And also, we hope you'll follow us on Twitter @shrink_tank and like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our producer and theme music composer is Sean Beck. In the Queen City, it's Jonathan Hederle and Frank Gaskell. And from Music City, I'm Dave Verhagen. Thanks for listening. Please tell all your friends about us. And make it a good week. Shrink Tank.